Тай хоос нөпчис атма хаю цова квас чесасок хавашим. Hi everyone, it is June 19th and today is our first class of this term. I'll be talking about the alphabet summary handout, which I'm sharing on my screen at this moment. This handout introduces the Neuchanov alphabet. It consists of three parts. Part one is an alphabetical list of the 45 letters of the Neuchanov alphabet, from short A to pharyngeal stop. So this is the alphabetical order that I use for the letters. There is no standard alphabetical order for Neuchanov, so you'll find several different ones that different people use. This is the alphabetical order that I use. For example, when I'm alphabetizing a list of words, or in the dictionary that I'm working on, I use this alphabetical order. Part two of the handout is all the same sounds, the same 45 sounds, but here the letters are organized in a grid according to the type of sound and where in the vocal tract it's made. In other words, place and manner. Those are the technical terms that linguists use to describe where in the vocal tract a sound is made and what kind of sound it is. Part three is a list of 44 example words. These are words specifically for the East Barkley Sound dialect. And each letter of the alphabet is exemplified by a single word. So this is like the A is for apple list, except that in Neuchanov, A is for putt-putt. There is one letter missing, which is the short O. That's because the short O is extremely rare in Neuchanov. Most dialects don't even use it. Only the Cayuga Checklist dialect uses short O, and it's found only in very restricted contexts. So no example word for short O, but there is an example word for every other letter. Let me go back to the chart in part two, and I'll walk you through how to read this chart and how to use it. First, like every human language, Neuchanov has consonant sounds and vowel sounds. Vowel sounds are singable sounds. They're made with a pretty open vocal tract. They're made with vibrating vocal cords. When you hear singing, singing mainly consists of vowel sounds. Just like English, the letters we use for vowels in Neuchanov are A, E, I, O, and U. However, they're not pronounced exactly the same in Neuchanov as they are in English. So we use the same vowel letters, but they're not pronounced exactly the same. And today you'll be learning what those differences are. Consonants are the other kind of sound. Consonants are quieter sounds. They are usually not singable. And consonants, one purpose of consonants is to separate the vowels. So human speech consists largely of vowel sounds separated by consonants. And most words of most languages, including Neuchanov and English, consist of sequences of consonant, vowel, consonant, vowel, consonant, vowel, with exceptions. In both Neuchanov and English, it's common to find two or more consonants in a row. This is not at all unusual. However, you never find two vowels in a row in Neuchanov. That is completely ruled out in Neuchanov. English doesn't like it either, but it does happen. So, for example, the name of the opera Aida has two vowel sounds in a row. Aida. But there are no words like that in Neuchanov. So, anytime you have two vowels in a word, they're always separated by at least one consonant in Neuchanov. Consonants, another purpose that consonants serve in human languages is to allow us to make more words. The more consonants and vowels we have in our language, the more different kinds of words we can make. And Neuchanov has quite a lot of consonants. English has a pretty average number of consonants. English has 24 consonants. Neuchanov has 35 consonants. So all of you as native English speakers, learning new channels as a second language are moving from a language with fewer sounds to a language with more sounds. And that is one of the challenges of learning new channels, that you have to learn a larger number of sounds than are found in your native language. The chart shows that there are three main kinds of consonants in new channels. They are plosives, spirants, and resonants. So, for example, the P sound is a plosive. The M sound is a resonant. And the S sound is a spirant. Understanding the differences between plosives, spirants, and resonants can help you understand a lot of important patterns in the language. Let me first explain what plosives, spirants, and resonants are, and then I'll give you an example or two of how understanding this difference can help you understand new channel. Plosive sounds like P, T, K, and Q have a very brief moment of silence, followed by a release of breath. So if you say these sounds, I was about to explain what plosives are. The plosive sounds of new channels include p, t, tl, ts, ch, k, qu, q, qu. And I'm just reading across the top row of the chart here. P, t, tl, ts, ch, k, qu, q, qu. What all these sounds have in common is that there's a very brief moment of silence followed by a release of breath. P, t. It's easier to see this when you put it between vowels. Appa, atta, akka. Can you hear that there's a very brief moment of silence? It's quite brief. It's about 10 milliseconds long, whereas the length of a vowel is anywhere from 50 to 100 milliseconds. So the silence in a plosive is a tenth or a 20th the length of a vowel sound. So very brief. And then it's followed by this puff of air, right? Pa, ta, kla, tsa. Ch, k, qu. Let's compare these to spirants. Spirants include sounds like bardel, s, s wedge, x, and I'll read across the third row of the chart. Th, s, sh, k, qu, h, qu, h, h. Spirants have no moment of silence. Spirants involve continuous airflow, right? As I'm saying, sh, sh, the air never stops flowing out of my lungs through my vocal tract. So that's the main difference between plosives on the one hand and spirants on the other, that plosives have a brief moment of silence where there's no airflow. Spirants have continuous airflow. There are some sounds that some people have trouble telling apart, like the bardel and the bard lambda, or the Q and the back X, that are distinguished by the fact that they're the same sound, except one is a plosive and one is a spirant. I think it'll be easier to start with sounds that we're more familiar with. So let's start with S-wedge and C-wedge. The C-wedge is the ch sound that we spell C-H in English. Ch. That's the C-wedge. The S-wedge is sh. Sh. I'd like to invite you to pronounce those sounds out loud. You can keep your microphones off, but say it to yourself. Ch. Sh. Ch, sh. And you should be able to feel that your tongue and your mouth are in exactly the same position to say ch as they are to say sh. The only difference between them is that ch has that brief moment of silence. Ch, ch, atcha, atcha. Whereas sh has no moment of silence. Sh, asha, asha. Because sh has no moment of silence, you can hold it out as long as you have breath, right? You can go shh. Whereas it's impossible to do that with C-wedge. Ch. You say it and then you're done. Ch. There's no way to hold it out, is there? Because it has to have that moment of silence followed by the release. This, once you understand this difference between plosives and spirants, that can help you understand how to distinguish sounds like the bard lambda and the bard L. So the bard lambda sounds like kla, kla. Kla, and the bardel sounds like sla, sla, sla. Here again, we have a pair of sounds which are identical except that one is a plosive and one is aspirant, right? Kla has that moment of silence. Kla, kla, moment of silence followed by a release. Whereas sa, sa is a spirant that makes continuous sound. Let's compare K and X. You all know the K sound because it's used in English. K, 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 k. The X is the spirant version of K. It sounds like k, k, k. The example word for X is chaumen. Chaumen, which means pigeon in New Channel. Chaumen. We can compare that to the example word for K, which is kook. Kook. Try saying kook and then chaumen. Chaumen. Those of you with strong English accents will be tempted to pronounce that X as an H. You'll be tempted to say chaumen because that's a sound that you're familiar with. But it is not an H sound. It is chaumen. Chaumen. H is made down here at the bottom of the throat, whereas the X is made at the back of the tongue, up in the mouth. Ch, ch. If you forget where X is made, just remember that it's made in exactly the same place as K. So anytime you need a reminder of how to say ch, which you might, because it's actually a rare sound in Neuchâtel. There aren't very many Neuchâtel words with front X in them. So a lot of the learners I work with have never properly learned to say the front X, partly because they don't get enough practice, because there aren't a lot of words. So you might need this reminder. When you forget how to say ch, one technique you can use is to go back to K, say k, 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 and then turn that into aspirant. Ch, 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 ch. We have a question. The question is the X sound in chaumen like the sound in chutzpah? Actually, the sound in chutzpah is the back X sound. So let's talk about that, since you guys are into chutzpah. I'll start with the Q. The Q is a sound that's found in Neuchâtel, but not in English. A Q is just like a K, except it's made further back in the mouth. So a K sounds like ka, 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 ka. A Q sounds like ka, 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 ka. Ka, 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 ka. Right now I'm sharing on my screen a diagram that you'll find in the online alphabet tutorial on the page called Consonants. It's a diagram of the vocal tract. It's called a mid-sagittal view. Sagitta means arrow in Latin, and the idea is that this is what you'd see if you shot an arrow down the center of someone's body and cut them in half. So it's a weird way to a weird way to name a technical concept, but that's why it's called that. So in this mid-sagittal view, you see the human vocal tract from the side. So at the left are the lips, in the middle is the tongue, and at the bottom right is the throat and the pharynx and the larynx. Linguists always look at mid-sagittal views like this facing to the left. That helps us organize sound charts. So in this chart, you can see the main articulators along the vocal tract, starting with the lips, and also some important consonants that are made at those places. So the P sound is made at the lips, pa pa pa. The T sound is made at the tongue tip, ta ta ta. The C wedge sound, cha, is made a little further back. K is made at the back of the tongue, k. And Q, k, is made at the top of the throat. So even further back along the tongue and at the top of the throat. It's close to the uvula. The uvula is that dangly piece of skin in the back of your mouth, and you can see it here. Because the Q sound is made close to the uvula, the technical term for these sounds is uvulars. I just call these sounds back sounds or tongue back sounds, because those words are more recognizable to more people. So the difference between K and Q is that K is made at the back of the tongue, just under the part of the roof of your mouth that is soft, as opposed to the frontier part, which is hard. The soft palate, it's called. That's where K is said. K, K, K. Whereas Q is made further back. K, K, K. At the top of the throat. When you say Q, one way to learn to say Q is to try to trigger your own gag reflex. K, K. You know, where you're pushing your tongue to the, at the same place in your throat that you would push with your finger if you were trying to make yourself vomit. This could save your life someday. That's one way to learn to say Q. Another way to learn to say Q is to just start with K and move your tongue further back. Ka 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 ka. Let's take a look at the example words for K and Q. Our example word for K, we've already heard, is kook, kook, which means a packed lunch, kook. Our example word for Q is kawi, kawi. Try to say those, kook, kawi, kook, kawi. I want to go around the room and see how well each of you can pronounce the Q sound. So we just went around the room and I gave everyone a chance to pronounce the words kook and kawi. Kook has a front K, kawi has a back Q. And if you forget how to say Q, start with a K. So this is a general strategy that you can use when learning to pronounce sounds in a language that has more sounds than your native language. You might have to find that eventually you want to get to the point where you you master the Q sound and you can just say K when you want to. But in the beginning, you probably will find that you need to start with a sound that you know, like K, and then modify it. So if you start with a K, you can modify it to a Q by moving the tongue contact further back to the top of the throat. K, 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 K. Hearing the difference between K and Q is a different thing entirely. I've been working on West Coast languages for 21 years now, and I can kind of hear the difference between K and Q most of the time, I think. But I remember when I started out, I could not hear the difference at all. Completely hopeless. I understood how to make the sound because I had studied articulatory phonetics. I understood how to make a K, how to make a Q, but I couldn't hear the difference. Gradually, after years of practice, I started to be able to hear the difference. But I still can't hear it as well as a native speaker can. And I'm pretty sure I will never be able to hear it as well as a native speaker can. That's one of the things that you have to learn as an infant. And if you don't learn it as an infant, you can never learn it as well as someone who did. And now we're finally getting to the answer to Ruben's question, which was, what is the first sound in the word chutzpah? And the answer is, the first sound in chutzpah is the back X. That's the sound that we write with an X and an underdot in Nuchana. And the back X is just the spirant version of Q. So when you're trying to pronounce a back X, you can get there by going from K to Q to back X, K, K, H, or you can go K to front X to back X, K, K, H. The difference between front X and back X is exactly the same as the difference between K and Q, except that they're spirant sounds. And our example words for front X and back X are chaumen, chaumen, chachashkuk, chachashkuk. I'll just say a couple more things about K, Q, front X, and back X, and then we'll take a break. I started to talk about how you can hear the difference between K versus Q, and that for those of you who are native English speakers learning Nuchanath as a second language, which is basically all of you, it takes a long time to develop the ability to hear the difference. However, you can all learn to pronounce the difference immediately. So just now when we went around, I think we found that all of you know how to pronounce the difference between K and Q. You might have to force yourself to do it, but you know how to do it. You can pronounce the difference. Probably, though, most of you cannot hear the difference. And you won't start to be able to hear the difference unless you keep working on Nuchanoth or a language with this or with this type of contrast for several years. But here are some clues that can help you when you're trying to tell the difference between K versus Q or front X versus back X. First, the fronter sounds are higher in pitch and the backer sounds are lower in pitch. So if you just listen to the pitch of my voice when I say K, 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 and the pitch of my voice when I say Q, k, 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 I think you can hear that there's a difference. The Q is lower, the K is higher. K, 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 k. Same goes for front X and back X. Okay. Yeah, that is probably not going to come through very well on the recording because the software that we're using is intended to cut out things that aren't speech, and the sounds that I was just making don't sound like speech to that software. But what I was doing was simply pronouncing K versus Q and front X versus back X without any voice. So all you were hearing was the silent echo of whispery sounds in my mouth. And the fronter sounds, K and front X, have a higher pitch simply because there is a smaller echoing cavity in front of them. Whereas the back sounds, Q and back X, have a lower pitch because there's more echoing cavity in front of them. The other clue that you can use to tell front sounds from back sounds is that the back sounds tend to be rougher. They aren't always rougher, but they tend to be. So K, K, Q, K, 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 K. The Q is sometimes rougher than the K. Same goes for front X and back X. The way I pronounce them, K, 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 the back X is rougher. I pronounce the back X rougher. However, that's not a reliable way to tell them apart because lots of fluent speakers do not pronounce uvulars roughly. They pronounce them quite softly. So I've heard lots of people, especially women, native speakers, when they pronounce the back X, it just sounds like ha, ha. It's quite soft. Ha. It's still back, but soft. There's one more important clue that you can use to tell them apart, and that is their effect on nearby vowels. So for example, let's compare the syllable key, which I would spell K-I-I, key, key, to the syllable k, k, which I would spell Q-I-I. What you should be able to hear is that when I pronounce K with a Q, the Q deforms the vowel a little bit. K, K. The vowel is supposed to be E, but it starts kind of more like E. And that's the effect of the Q pulling the tongue back, because the tongue is a back sound. It pulls the tongue back, and that prevents us from making a perfect E sound. So I think the main way that fluent speakers of Nuchanoth and other languages with this contrast can distinguish front sounds from back sounds is by their effect on nearby vowels. So far, I've been talking about plosives and spirants, and I'm about to expand the discussion to include resonance. The third type of consonant that you see in this table is the resonance. So the three main types of consonants in Nuchanoth are plosives, spirants, and resonance. Resonance are the most vowel-like consonants because they're made with vibrating vocal cords. Their sounds like m, m, e, u, and you can hear that these sounds have voice, whereas sounds like p, t, t, sh, s, sh have no voice of their own. Voice means vibrating vocal cords. So resonant consonants have in common with vowels that they are pronounced with voice. As a result, resonant consonants are somewhat singable. You know, you can kind of sing going right, those are M sounds, and M is a singable consonant. We can compare some plosive spirants and resonants that are made at the same place. So take, for example, the C wedge, S wedge, and the Y. Ch, sh, y. These are all made at the same place, at the front of the roof of the mouth, at the place that's called the hard palate. That's the place where the roof of your mouth is hard, as opposed to the soft palate, which is further back. And ch, sh, and y are all made at the soft palate. The difference is that ch is a plosive, sh is aspirant, and y is a resonant. So the fact that y, the y sound, is a resonant means that it's pronounced with voice. Also, it has very little contact, comparatively little contact, between articulators. When I say y, my tongue comes close to my hard palate, but it doesn't touch it. Y. Whereas when I say ch and sh, there is full contact. When I say m or n, the nasals, m and n, there is no air flowing through my mouth, but air is flowing freely through the nose. And that's why these sounds are called nasals. M and n are nasal sounds. Nasal, the defining characteristic of nasal sounds is that they're made with air flowing freely through the nose, whereas all other sounds in the language are strictly oral. That is, the air is flowing only through the mouth and not through the nose. Now that we've talked about the three main types of consonants in Nuchanalt, we can point out certain patterns. First of all, there are no spirants made at the lips. Nuchanalt has plosives made at the lips, pa and pa, and it has resonants made at the lips, ma and ma, but no spirants made at the lips. And this is generally the case not only in Nuchanalt, but throughout the Pacific Northwest. The native languages of the Pacific Northwest generally lack spirant sounds made at the lips. English has spirant sounds made at the lips. Those are the F and V sounds, F and V. But if you've studied a Pacific Northwest language, you might have noticed that these sounds are completely absent. No Pacific Northwest language has spirant sounds made at the lips. Another interesting pattern that this chart makes clear is that plosive sounds can be glottalized or plain. That's why we have two rows of plosives in this chart. The first row is the plain plosives, pa, ta, tla, tsa, cha, and so on. The second row is the glottalized plosives, or hard plosives for short. Pa, ta, tla, tsa, cha, ka, kwa. The difference between the two is that the glottalized ones are made with a glottal gesture, which I'll define more precisely in a minute. Resonants can also be glottalized in Nuchanalt. So we have plain resonance, ma na ya wa, as well as hard resonance, ma na ya wa. However, there are only plain spirants. There's no such thing as a glottalized spirant in Nuchanalt. And that's true also in general for languages of the Pacific Northwest. There's one language in the Pacific Northwest that has glottalized spirants, and that's Thlinkit. But every other language completely lacks them. Another thing that this chart makes clear is that only certain sounds, certain consonants, can be rounded. We write lip rounding with a small raised W. And you'll notice that the sounds that can be written with a small raised W are K, Q, front X, and back X. Those four sounds can be pronounced plain, ka, 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 or rounded, qua, 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 qua. And there are no other consonants in the language that follow that pattern that can be pronounced plain or rounded. All other consonants are always unrounded. What this chart shows is that those sounds all have in common that they're made with the back of the tongue, right? K and Q and front X and back X, all made with the back of the tongue. K and front X are a little further forward. Q and back X are a little further back, but they're all made with the back of the tongue. And it's those sounds, and only those sounds, that are compatible with lip rounding. Notice that the W sound, which is almost pure lip rounding is also in the same part of the chart. That is because you might ask, why is W in the tongue back column of the chart and not the lip part of the chart? If W is made with rounded lips, wuh, wuh. And the reason is that that's not the only important bit of the W sound. Yes, W is made with rounded lips, but W is also made with a raised tongue back. If you say wuh, 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 you should be able to feel the back of your tongue going up as well as your lips rounded. So the W sound and the fact that these other tongue back sounds can be rounded or not demonstrates that there is something compatible about the combination of a tongue back gesture and a lip rounding gesture, which we don't find with any other consonants. So I've just mentioned two very general patterns in the sound system of Nuchonals that this chart makes clear. The first pattern was the fact that certain consonants can be glottalized and certain other consonants cannot. The consonants that can be glottalized are the plosives and resonants. The consonants that can't be glottalized are the spirants. The second pattern was that only some consonants can be pronounced with lip rounding, and those are the tongue back consonants. Those are a couple of general patterns about the sound system. Let me give you a more specific pattern that is easier to understand if you understand how to read this chart. And this has to do with the pattern that we call hardening. I've just put some data in the chat window. There's a couple of data sets here. The first shows three words that include the suffix "-ahs". The suffix "-ahs" means in a vessel, like a canoe or a bowl or a drinking cup. These are all vessels. And "-ahs" is means that in Nuchonal. The words are "-sachgahs", which is a comb. That's the kind of comb you comb your hair with. "-tlopmahs", which means like a hot drink. And "-mathahs", which is like a cold drink. The second data set shows three words, including the ending "-uk". "-uk" is a very common ending in Nuchonal. We often translate it as "now", but it is "now" in the sense of "now" unlike before. It is not "now" in the sense of "this moment", "now". This is hard for English speakers to grasp because in English we use the same word, N-O-W, for both concepts. But in Nuchonal, "this moment" is "klah", which is an independent word. Whereas "now", unlike before, is the "uk" expressed by an ending "uk". I've also written "uk" with an equal sign before it to show that it's a clitic, which is a certain kind of ending. And I've written "ahs" with a dash before it to show that it's a suffix, which is another kind of ending. Something these two endings have in common is that they are hardening, and that's why I've written them with a exclamation point. I use the exclamation point to indicate this property that we call hardening. Hardening is an abstract property that some endings have in Nuchonal, quite a lot of endings, actually. And what hardening does is it tries to glottalize the preceding sound. So when you add a hardening ending to a stem, the ending will glottalize the last sound of the stem, if possible. And it's not always possible. So this shows what happens when we add these two hardening endings to a few different stems. Let me walk you through these data, and then I'll explain the pattern, and then I'll say how understanding the consonant chart that we've been talking about can help you understand this pattern. Such gas means a comb. Its root is suchk. Suchk means sharp. And it's part of the word for comb because combs have sharp teeth. The root suchk just ends in a plain K. But when we add this ending to it, we get such gas with a glottalized K. Such gas. So the ending successfully glottalizes its stem in this word. The hardening is realized as glottalization. In tlopmahs, which describes a hot drink, the root tlum ends in a plain M, tlum, But when it takes its ending, it becomes tlo-mahs with a glottalized M. Tlo-mahs. So again, the ending successfully glottalizes its stem. Now take a look at mas'ahs, which is a cold drink. The root is mas, which means cold. It ends in a barred L. And barred L cannot glottalize in New Channel. We talked about how there is no such thing as a glottalized spirant in New Channel. So when we add the ending ahs to it, the barred L does not glottalize. Instead, the hardening is realized as a glottal stop. So the word for a cold drink is mas'ahs. Mas'ahs. And you should be able to hear that I'm pronouncing a glottal stop after the barred L. Mas'ahs. So we see that the hardening of ahs sometimes can harden the last sound of its stem, and at other times is pronounced as a glottal stop. Now let's take a look at these data with ut. Ut is also a hardening ending. It behaves a little differently from ahs, mainly because ahs is a suffix, whereas ut is a clitic. And it's okay if you don't know what suffixes and clitics are at this point. We'll get more into it much later in the course. The three stems that we're adding ut to here are uchkak, which means foggy, na'atah, which means listening, and usim, which means needing or wanting. The result is that when we add ut to uchkak, we get uchkakak, so the hardening is realized as glottalization, uchkakak. In na'atah, na'atah ut, the hardening is realized as a glottal stop. And similarly, in usim ut, the hardening is realized as a glottal stop. So the generalization is that when a hardening ending follows a stem, we can predict whether the hardening will be realized as glottalization or as a glottal stop based on the type of sound at the end of the stem. A plosive like K will always harden. So whether it's followed by a hardening suffix like ahs or a hardening clitic like uk, K will always harden. A resonant, like M, will harden when it's followed by a hardening suffix, as in tlo-mahs, but it will not harden when it's followed by a hardening clitic, as in osim-ak. Stems that end in spirants, like mas and na'atah, never harden. And so, in these cases, the hardening is always realized as a glottal stop. In order to understand this pattern, it helps to understand the difference between plosives, spirants, and resonants, on the one hand, as well as the difference between a suffix and a clitic. If this is the first time you've heard of a pattern like this, you might think it sounds very complex. But it's the kind of thing that you can learn to do without even thinking about it, because it makes so much phonetic sense. And natural languages are full of patterns like these that sound complicated when we spell it out in words, like I just did, but actually make a lot of sense because they're based on how the language is actually pronounced and how its sound system works. So I shared that pattern with you just to demonstrate how it can help to understand some of these concepts that I've been talking about. So we just had a couple of questions about the properties of endings. You'll often hear me say ending, because ending is a convenient cover term for suffixes and clitics. Suffixes and clitics are two kinds of ending. They have in common that they come at the ends of words, but they also have some differences. I've just been talking about a property that some endings have, which is that they are hardening. They try to glottalize the last sound of their stem if they can. There are some other special properties that endings can have in New Channel. For example, quite a lot of endings have weak consonants. So I've written a couple of endings here in the chat. One is ma. Ma is a mood ending that means I. So we use it when we say, for example, chachem hema, I'm okay. That ending mah means I. That M at the beginning of the ending is sometimes pronounced and sometimes not. So if I say, for example, na'ataha, I'm listening, na'ataha, there's no M. So that M is pronounced after some stems and not after others. And to signal that, we often write it in brackets, or what Americans call parentheses. Another thing, the other ending I've listed here is E, which is the basic command ending. Both E and ma have what I call weak long vowels, which means the vowels are sometimes long and sometimes short. And when writing these in a technical context, I often indicate that with the dot. A single dot after a vowel means that it's a weak long vowel, sometimes long, sometimes short. Yet another pattern that we find with endings in Neuchâtel is that they sometimes impose prosodic templates on their stems. They lengthen or shorten vowels in their stems, or they reduplicate their stem. These patterns and we have ways of writing these patterns. So I've just given you three endings, E, Ma, and Punach, that have some of these patterns that I've been talking about, and we have ways of encoding them, you know, technical ways of writing them. So one of the questions was, when we learn new endings, will we learn their special properties at the same time? And the answer is yes, we will. But they'll often be encoded in these technical ways that you have to learn how to read and understand. And my experience is that some learners are comfortable learning technical ways of talking about these things and even benefit from it. Other learners are less comfortable doing that and don't really benefit from it. And I tend to think of those as analytical learners versus intuitive learners. So if you're more of an analytical learner, you're in the right place, because I specialize in technical descriptions of patterns like this. That comes from my training as a linguist. If you're an intuitive learner, then the best way to learn patterns like this is to do what I call word building. Let me give you a brief example of that. I've just written four words here. The words are atlakwas, atlakwasink, ukwink, ukwinkpanach. These words mean eight, doing it with eight people, with, walking around with. And saying these words next to each other helps our brains practice some of these patterns. So the suffix ink, for example, means with, right? And we see that in atlakwasink, which means with eight people, and okwink, which just means with. Also, the suffix punach is a lengthening suffix. It lengthens the first vowel of its stem. So whereas ukwink has two short vowels, ukwinkpanach starts with its first vowel is long, and that's the effect of the suffix. And just saying these words, practicing saying these words, atlakwas, atlakwasink, ukwink, ukwinkpanach, teaches your brain to find the word, compare it to other related words, and pronounce it properly based on these patterns. And this kind of exercise that I call word building is helpful for everyone, but for intuitive learners, it's the main way that they have to learn these patterns. Whereas for analytical learners, there's also the technical explanation, which helps some of us, and some of us are able to use as a shortcut. The other question we got was, are these patterns predictable? So like, you know, punach lengthens its stem. Does punach always lengthen its stem? In the case of punach, yes, it always lengthens its stem. What about weak-long vowels? Is that a regular pattern? It's pretty regular, although native speakers, when they're speaking at fluent speed, don't always apply it 100% consistently. Hardening is a little less regular. It's pretty regular, but a little less regular than those other patterns that I just mentioned. So I guess the answer to the question, are these patterns predictable? Are they regular? Is that they are mostly regular and mostly predictable, but there are exceptions. Let me give you an example of an exception. I've just put a few more data in the chat to demonstrate an exception to these regular patterns. There's a suffix achit, which is not hardening. So we have lots of word pairs like tlats, tlatsachik. Tlats is to be fat, tlatsachik is to get fat. Ink means fire, in Quechic means to burst into flame, to catch on fire. And what's strange here is that in Quechic has a glottalized qua when it shouldn't. We don't predict that K to glottalize because the suffix achic is usually not hardening. But in this particular word, it acts as if it's hardening. And there's no obvious explanation for it. So these patterns are pretty regular, but not 100% regular. And you will be learning exceptions as we go along. I'm now going to pronounce all 44 example words that appear on the alphabet summary handout. When I'm teaching the letters to beginners, especially to children, I will mention the names of the letters, and I'll say something like, short A says as in putt-putt, putt-putt. Long A says ah, as in wah, wah. But since all of you are good readers and you can read the names of the letters for yourself, I will just pronounce the Nuchonalth words for the rest of this handout, starting with tsa-pin, tsa-pin, tsa-wak, tsa-wak, chakup, chakup, chapats, chapats, we-itch, we-itch, epinus, epinus, husmin, husmin, hayu, hayu, himix, himix, teach, teach, cook, cook, quistoop, quistoop, kain, kain, quis, quis, thutsma, thutsma, klama, klama, klisuk, klisuk, mamati, mamati, ma-mirso, ma-mirso, nunuk, nunuk, hootni, hootni, oyinchus, oyinchus, powits, powits, puppy, puppy, kawi, kawi, kwini, kwini, sasin, sasin, shukwa, shukwa, tupkuk, tupkuk, tattoos, tattoos, mukmukwa, mukmukwa, moo, moo, wiak, wiak, sutwa, sutwa, chaumen, Ha'umen. Huakak. Huakak. Hachashkok. Hachashkok. Mochoshkin. Mochoshkin. Yacha. Yacha. Sitya. Sitya. Ama. Ama. Anus. Anus. Jew, that's all 44 words. For you beginners out there, and for you intermediate and advanced learners who are refreshing your understanding of the alphabet and also improving your ability to read new Nuchanath words, let me give you an idea of where I expect you to be with respect to your understanding of the alphabet and your ability to read Nuchanath words with good pronunciation. It's going to take time for you beginners to get used to the whole alphabet. In the past, I have covered every single sound and explained it in one day. And in doing that, I learned that it's not a good thing to do because the alphabet's just too big. There are too many letters in Nuchanath to cover in one day. So my main hope for today is that at the end of today, you will all be able to pronounce all of the vowels reliably. In the written alphabet, we have 10 vowel letters, so A, E, I, O, U, each of which can be written short or long. But in fact, Nuchanath only has 8 vowels, really. That's because short E isn't really a distinctive vowel. Rather, it's simply an alternate pronunciation of short A. And short O is not used except in the northernmost dialect. And even there, it's used in a very restricted way. So that leaves 8 vowels in the language. Furthermore, the mid vowels, by which I mean E and O, are unusual. By far, the most common vowels are A, I, and U. So really, Nuchanath has a 3-vowel system, which is doubled by the fact that each of those vowels can be short or long, plus 2 more long vowels that are much less common. So in a way, there are 6 vowels that you really need to know that you're going to use all the time, plus 2 more that you're going to use sometimes. Right now, we're looking at the first page of the tutorial part of the online alphabet tutorial, and you'll see that I've divided the alphabet up into several chunks. These are the chunks that I like to divide the alphabet into for the purposes of teaching the alphabet and the order that I like to teach them in. So we're going to practice the vowels first, and that's going to be our goal for today. Over the next few days, we will look closely at each of these other chunks of the alphabet, the common consonants, the tip of the tongue sounds, the L sounds, and so on. But today, we'll be focusing just on the vowels. This page of the online alphabet tutorial lists the 10 written vowels and with a reminder about how each one is pronounced. This tells us, for example, that short A says "uh" and long A says "ah." You can read this yourself, and you're about to. I'm going to get you guys to practice in pairs or in groups of 3, pronouncing the different vowel sounds. And I'll just point out some of the things that English speakers tend to have the most trouble with. First of all, the long vowels in Nuchanath really are long. The long vowels are about twice as long in duration as their short counterparts. So a short vowel like or I or u is about 50 milliseconds long, roughly speaking, and their long versions, a, e, u, are about 100 milliseconds long. So they're the long vowels actually are longer than the short vowels. This can be difficult for English speakers, first because English does not distinguish vowel length. So this is another thing that English speakers can learn to say, but have a lot of difficulty hearing, because English doesn't actually distinguish vowels by their duration. We have a lot of difficulty hearing it in other languages. When you took English in school, you probably heard your English teacher talking about short and long vowels. So, for example, the vowel of pet is described as a short vowel, whereas the vowel of ski is described as a long vowel. But when we talk about short and long vowels in English, actually all we're talking about is a quality difference. Basically, the vowels that we call long in English are pronounced closer to the edges of the vowel space, whereas the vowels that we call short are pronounced closer to the center of the vowel space. They differ in quality. They do not actually differ in duration. So long and short vowels is kind of a misleading term when we're talking about English vowels. When we're talking about Nechanel vowels, it's exactly right. Nechanel short and long vowels really are short and long. So that's going to be a challenge for you as a native English speaker, learning to pronounce and hear the difference between short and long vowels. On the other hand, something that is going to be easier for you, because English is your native language, is that almost all of the vowel sounds of Nechanel are going to be easy for you to pronounce in quality. I'm talking about quality now, not quantity. The vowel qualities of Nechanel are going to be easy for you because English is a vowel-rich language. English has an average number of consonants, but an unusually large number of vowels. So English speakers are quite good at hearing differences in vowel quality, just not good at hearing differences in vowel length. And all of the vowels of Nechanel, all of the vowel qualities that we find in Nechanel, are also found in English, except one, and that is the vowel of the long O sound, O. Our example word for long O is oyunchus, oyunchus, oyunchus. This vowel sound, O, is a little different from the English O. The English O sounds like O, O. The Nechanel long O sounds like O, O. It's a little more open. The mouth is a little more open. The jaw is a little lower. The lips are open wider. Oh. Whereas the English vowel sound, O, the lips are closer together, the jaw is higher. Also, we tighten our lips through the sound. At the beginning of the English O, our lips are a little more apart, but by the end, they're closer together. O, O. In other words, the English O is a diphthong. It's not actually one pure vowel sound. It starts out as an O and ends up as an U. O. And you're going to want to pronounce it, you're going to want to pronounce the Nechanel long O the same way. That's a mark of your English accent. But in order to learn to pronounce the Nechanel long O with a good Nechanel accent, you're going to have to learn to let go of the English O and learn to pronounce the Nechanel O. O. So here are the properties of the Nechanel long O. First of all, it's a monophthong. That is, it's the same throughout. It has the same quality throughout. So the openness of the lips does not change. Second, it's actually long, so it should be twice as long as a short vowel. Third, our accent, the accent that most of us speak of English, which is from the west coast of North America, does not have this vowel, but there are plenty of other English accents that do have this vowel. So on the east coast, there are people who say the word daughter. They pronounce daughter as daughter. That's the closer to the quality of the English of the Nechanel long O. So people say daughter, daughter in English are using the quality, more or less the same quality as the Nechanel long O. We're looking now at the page of the online alphabet tutorial called Common Consonants. And by common consonants, I mean these nine consonants, H, K, M, N, P, S, T, W, Y. I call them the common consonants because they are spelled and pronounced identically in English and Nechanel. So You already know how to pronounce these 9 consonants in Nuchanal. So if you know how to pronounce all the vowels, you should be able to pronounce all of the words in this table. The words in this table are easy to pronounce words that consist only of vowels and common consonants. So let's go through them. How do we say head of family? Just shout it out. Head of family. Good. Tai Yi. How about holding? Su. How about black? Mm-hmm. Tupkuk in most dialects, Tupkuk in East Barkley Sound. Arrive. No. So we just read the 12 words on the page of the online alphabet tutorial called Common Consonants. These words consist only of common consonants and vowels. And these words are Tai, Su, Tupkuk, Hinin, Pasak, Mamuk, Tana, Wikus, Husmin, Sasin, Kiwitana, Hamut. These are, as these words are pronounced in the northern Nuchanal dialect, there are a couple of tiny differences between them and East Barkley Sound. And those are that the word for black in East Barkley Sound is Tupkuk, Tupkuk with 2 short U's, and the word for money is Tana with 2 long A's, Tana in East Barkley Sound. Interesting note about the word Tai Yi. This word is originally Nuchanal and was borrowed into Chinook Wawa, which is a widely spoken trade language that was used a lot from about 1850 to 1950. And you don't hear it much anymore, but there's still tons of places and clubs around the Pacific Northwest, you know, in Seattle, Vancouver, Vancouver Island, that use the word Tai Yi. In Nuchanal, Tai Yi means senior, like the oldest brother in a family, or a senior chief in a village with more than one chief. But then it got borrowed into English, basically with the meaning of chief. Yes, Tana went in the other direction. So Tana is from English and then came to Nuchanal from English through Chinook Wawa. So it comes from the English word dollar. So dollar gives us Chinook Wawa Tala, which becomes Tana in Nuchanal because Nuchanal has no L. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Tai Yi went from Nuchanal to Chinook to English, and Tana went from English to Chinook to Nuchanal. All right, let me wrap up this lecture. Today's recorded lecture has ended up being... Thank you. that made it onto the recording because I'm recording onto my own computer. But I'll say it again since you guys couldn't hear me. Today's recorded lecture has ended up being just over an hour long. And usually I try to keep them between 30 and 45 minutes. But today's ended up being kind of long. I gave you an overview of the sound system. We talked about all 45 letters of the Nuchanal alphabet. We pronounced 44 example words, but most of you will not have mastered the entire alphabet yet. We just tried to master the vowel system today, and I listened to each one of you pronounce the 8 vowels, the 9 vowels that are used in Barkley Sound dialects. And then we practiced reading some words that are written only with common consonants and vowel sounds. There's one other thing I wanted to mention, which is a frequent issue for English speakers reading Nuchanal. This is not really a pronunciation issue, it's a reading issue. And The issue is the sounds represented by the short A and short U letters in new channels. These sounds are in English. They're perfectly easy for English speakers to pronounce. The problem is that English speakers forget which vowel sound is represented by A and which vowel sound is represented by U. Because in English spelling, the a sound, as in put put, can be spelled either with an A letter or a U letter, right? That's a feature of English spelling, whereas Nuchonal spelling is much more regular, and in Nuchonal, the a sound is only spelled with a short A. I've put a few common words in the chat that you can use to remind yourself of this when you find yourself forgetting. Chakup, Muschim, and Husmin are three very common, easy to pronounce Nuchonal words that demonstrate which sound is indicated by short A and which sound is indicated by short U. The meanings of these words are man, villager, and kelp. Jew. That's the end of today's lecture.